Stay tuned for Bob and Your Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob and Your with our Denver Bible Church update. In the book of Acts, Luke wrote the book of Acts, and he tells us that the apostles and their converts, right after Christ rose from the dead, that they sold their homes, their land, all their possessions, and they used all the money for their ministry. They lived basically in a commune, like communists. And of course, Karl Marx, he loved that. He used that to defend his idea that it's wrong to have private property. Not that he believed in the Bible or Jesus Christ, but it was just handy. And I wonder if you Christians out there, this is Bob and Your Live. It's a Christian call-in news talk show. But this is our church update part, the first 5 minutes of the show. But I'm wondering, how would you handle that teaching in the book of Acts that we find out that they sold their homes and lands and they pooled all their money? For example, in Acts chapter 2, verse 44, it says that now all who believed were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. Now that sounds terribly like communism, right? And in also, what else do we have? In Acts chapter 4, all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet. And they distributed to each as anyone had need. So why is it that the Christians in the book of Acts, including the apostles, were they, in fact, that was their economic system. That was their administration. They were telling their converts to sell their homes and give all the money to the ministry, and they ran it like a commune. Why were they doing that? And should Christians today do that? Should everyone in the world do that, as Karl Marx pointed out? No. They did that because Jesus had told them that he was leaving, but that he would return soon, and that they should sell their homes and their lands and everything they had and give the money away, and that they would be persecuted, hunted down, killed by the religious and political leaders, and they'd be persecuted, arrested, beat, imprisoned, and killed. And therefore, that in that kind of environment, money in the bank is not going to help you all that much. And so Jesus had prepared them for an intense persecution, in fact, a great tribulation, which they began to endure. And they were hoping that the Lord would come back soon and that they would not need their homes or their lands. And that's why they sold all that they had. And then after the Lord did not return quickly, as if you read in the Gospels in the book of Acts, you see that they were expecting him to come back soon. But the nation of Israel had rejected their king. And so why give them a kingdom when they're rejecting their king? God had cut off Israel and he grafted in the body of Christ, where there's Jew and Gentile together in the body. And so the Apostle Paul went out and he preached the gospel to the Gentiles, and he took collections from the Gentile converts and would bring the money to Jerusalem to the Jewish saints who were in Jerusalem who were in poverty because they had sold their homes and their lands, because communism doesn't work. But they had done this at that time because they were expecting the Lord to return quickly, and he didn't. Why didn't he? Well, there's reasons for all this. These are not just incidentals in the story. They're fundamental to understanding the story of the New Testament. But a lot of Christians, they rather ignore the fact that the apostles and even the Holy Spirit had everybody sell their homes and their lands and pool all their money. Why did they do that, and why did it fall apart? Well, that's one of the things we study at Denver Bible Church, and we invite you to come on out. Hey, this Sunday, we're going to be celebrating Christmas, so we're looking forward to seeing you. And now, stay tuned for Bob and Your Live.
Service with a wink.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-INYART, 1-800-836-9278. This is the first time we've had to chat together since Saddam Hussein was captured. And so that certainly is a reason to celebrate, and I'd like to talk about that a bit, and other news this hour, especially the bombshell memo, if authentic, the London Sunday Telegraph, yesterday, reported about a memo written to Saddam Hussein in 2000 and 2001 that said that that Mohammed Atta was training in Baghdad for an attack on the U.S. And so we'll talk about this. This obviously, boy, talk about a smoking gun if this turns out to be true. And it may be true. The media in the U.S. is not really reporting this. O'Reilly has reported it. It came out. I was first aware of this Sunday morning at 5 a.m. That's when I first saw this. And so I'll bring you some of these details about this memo that has been found in Baghdad. You know, now the U.S. and the coalition forces have control of all Saddam's infrastructure, his palaces, offices, government offices. And while much of it was gutted, it's hard to gut everything. So, all right. So anyway, we'll get to that. And was 9/11 planned and trained for in Baghdad? And if, you know, right after 9/11, it was pretty much only the right-wing news sources that were talking about a 727 plane that was sitting in, what was it, south of Baghdad and southeast of Baghdad and being used to train terrorists to hijack airplanes. And the FBI and the CIA, they thought that the defectors who had talked about that were just exaggerating, maybe for fame or infamy, to suggest that they had some knowledge of 9/11 before it happened, and they blew them off, even though satellite photos, sure enough, showed the fuselage of a plane right where these two defectors had said it was. And so it was pretty much only the right-wing media after 9/11 that harped on that plane repeatedly, and eventually even we gave up. But anyway, we'll talk about that more. Britain, which is totally against the death penalty, Great Britain against the death penalty, yet their foreign secretary said that if Iraqis decide to kill Saddam Hussein, they're all for it. Well, they didn't say they're all for it, but they said they'll respect the decision. And of course, if they don't kill Saddam Hussein, that would be profaning God. But the Iraqi government will be profaning God at any rate, because it's certainly not going to be a government that honors God, the true God. By the way, our phone number here is 1-800-8-INYART, 1-800-836-9278. And the Iraqi governing officials, the Iraqi governing council, members on that council are saying Saddam certainly could be executed. In fact, he most certainly would be executed, and that his trial might even be televised, or would probably be televised. That'd be a trial, huh? That'd be good. That'd be very good. All right, what else do we have in the news? We have a new weapon that can shoot around corners, and Israel is going to start using the weapon next week, and U.S. forces have already begun training with it, and our SWAT and police teams are interested in it. It's a gun made by a company that it's an Israeli-American company owned by Americans and Israelis, And it's a gun that has like an extension and a right angle. And the firing mechanism is around the corner, around the right angle. And the part that you hold, the stock, it has the trigger and a little TV screen. And there's a camera right out by the barrel of the gun. And you could use various standard issue firearms. You could use laser scopes and silencers. And so you could shoot around a corner pretty accurately, apparently, up to a couple hundred yards. This sounds like a neat weapon. We didn't need that, of course, to get Saddam out of that hole in the ground. But it'd be an interesting weapon to add to the mix. What else is in the news? This was the headline. Let me tell you my first thought. A nurse in New Jersey is charged with murder, with killing 30 to 40 people. A former New Jersey nurse charged with murder of up to 40 people. I read the headline, and my first thoughts were that it's a man. You know, most nurses are women. That one, it's a man, and two, it's a homosexual. Those are my first thoughts. Now, why? I must have a demented mind, right? So I don't know yet. I can't get enough information here. But the story is that a former nurse in Somerville, New Jersey, this is stories out as of today by the Associated Press, has been charged with murder after claiming to kill 30 to 40 patients over a 16-year period, according to prosecutors today. During a court appearance, Charles Cullen stood and told the judge, "I'm going to plead guilty." He said he didn't want a lawyer. So it is a guy. Now, I don't know if he's a homosexual, but we'll find out. But I only guess that because of the mass murderers we've had in the past 20 years, they're inordinately homosexual. Inordinately. So many of them are homosexuals. So I'm going to add this guy to our mass murderer homosexual database, and we'll see, and with a question mark, and we'll see if we get more information on him as the story develops. All right, what else do we have here? We've got, and speaking of New Jersey, the New Jersey State Assembly, their Congress, state legislature, is apparently passing a bill that would allow human cloning. And, you know, that's Christians are against human cloning. And the idea of human cloning, you know, there are different reasons given by those who want to clone humans. But some of the reasons include things like, well, harvesting organs, for example. You clone a human being and you grow it so large enough till you get to harvest the organs that you want. And then you take it apart. So anyway, New Jersey, that's the state. I was born in New Jersey. You think New Jersey's going to hell in a handbasket? I guess it is. If this were a TV show, I think I'd have a nice big handbasket and I'd have a map of the 50 states, like those wooden ones that you take each state out, and when they do something evil like this, put it in the handbasket. And the handbasket would have a sign on it and say, "To hell." Because New Jersey is obviously going to hell in a handbasket. But then which state is not? Which is the best state? Which is the best state? I doubt that one would really qualify as the best. It's like when Joshua met the Lord, and Joshua, he wasn't sure who he was. And Joshua said, "Are you for me or my enemies?" And Jesus said, "Neither." I like that. You know, when a wise man is given a choice of A or B, he often chooses C. C. All right. So now let's get to the story here about this document According to yesterday's London Sunday Telegraph, by the way, I got this story off of Newsmax.com. And this story comes from the London Sunday Telegraph, that a memo written to Saddam Hussein in 2001, recently uncovered by Iraq's new coalition government, shows that 9/11 hijacker Mohammed Atta was trained to attack the U.S. in Baghdad. Could you imagine if this turns out to be true? There's a couple benefits here. One is that the gut instincts of the conservative right wingers will be shown yet again for the umpteenth time to be vindicated over liberals who not only do not know right from wrong, but they despise the very notion of right from wrong. And they hate. In fact, they hate moral clarity. They hate it. Like Alan Combs on this show a week ago, you know, Hannity and Combs, Fox News Channel's Hannity and Combs, the co-host Alan Combs, said that he thought we shouldn't have taken Saddam out of power because we shouldn't have done it alone. And I pointed out to him that Saddam is responsible for the violent deaths of over 1 million people. And he agreed with that. And he said, but we shouldn't have done it alone. So what? If you can't get a crowd to hide in, you're not going to stop a murderer? How many millions of people does a tyrant have to slaughter before you're willing to go it alone and stop him? So if Adolf Hitler, if enough members of the world community are refuse to move against a murderer, mass murdering tyrant, then you just got to let him go. You got to let the rest of the world dictate whether you're going to be a man or not and protect innocent people from being slaughtered. So, but it'll be good. You know, the main reason it'll be good is because it's good to punish the guilty. And Iraq and Saddam Hussein, it was a terrorist government. It supported terror. And it certainly supported terrorism against the United States and our allies. So, but if this turns out to be true, that the lead 9/11 hijacker, Atta, what's his name, Atta? What's his whole name? Muhammad, that's right, Muhammad. Every other terrorist is named Muhammad. What's with that? What's with that? Anyway, if it turns out that this memo is authentic, that this obviously will be huge. The memo is authored by Iraqi intelligence chief Tahir Jalil Habush al-Tikriti. All right, now that was the abbreviated form of his name. His full name is Tahir Jalil al-Alabi Habush al-Tikriti. And it's dated July 1st, 2001. And it describes a work program undertaken by Mohammed Atta at a base in Baghdad run by, guess who? Now, we've talked about this guy repeatedly since 9/11 on this show, by Abu Nidal. And Abu Nidal is a terrorist who's attacked Americans, killed Americans too, right? Attacked our embassies in different countries. And Saddam Hussein gave him a terrorist base in Baghdad. So Saddam was supporting terrorists who have attacked America just in Abu Nidal. At any rate, supposedly Abu Nidal was training terrorists to hijack airplanes using this unique method where they slit the throats of the flight crew and take over the plane. And so, and then, you know, last year, Abu Nidal, what was it, a couple years ago now? Less than 2 years ago? Abu Nidal was killed in Baghdad, obviously at the command of Saddam Hussein. So why would Hussein have Abu Nidal murdered? Well, Abu Nidal You know, terrorists, they're not always the best of friends. And Abu Nidal could have, especially if he got out of Iraq, he could have blackmailed Saddam and said, I want $10 million a year or a month or whatever, or I'm going to spill the beans and provide American intelligence with the evidence that the Muhammad Atta trained in Baghdad on your airplane, Sammy, or Saddami, or whatever, Salami. So this we're learning about this through the London Sunday Telegraph, and they quote, for example, a member of Iraq's presidential committee, Dr. Ayad Alawi. Dr. Ayad Alawi. And Dr. Alawi said that the document was genuine. And he continued, he told the Telegraph, the London Telegraph, he said, we are uncovering evidence all the time of Saddam's involvement with Al-Qaeda. But this is the most compelling piece of evidence that we have found so far. It shows that not only did Saddam have contacts with Al-Qaeda, he had contact with those responsible for the September 11 attacks. Now, again, could this be forged? It could be. But it'll be fascinating to find out more about it. Wow. And back in October of 2001, the month after 9/11, two Iraqi defectors had told U.S. intelligence that they helped train Islamic terrorists to attack U.S. flight crews using the techniques that were used on 9/11. And they said that they did this training at a terrorist camp south of Baghdad known as Salman Pak. Salman, S-A-L-M-A-N, Pak, P-A-K. And one of the defectors named Saba Kodada, can't these guys have normal names like Joe Smith or something? One of the defectors, Muhammad Abul Adrul Muhammad Kodada, subsequently told PBS, of all people, of all networks, that he believed the 9/11 attacks were perpetrated by graduates of the terrorist camp south of Baghdad. So, and that's the CIA and the FBI all along, they've dismissed Kodada Muhammad Adrul Muhammad Kohadada. They've dismissed these defectors and other eyewitness accounts of the hijacked training camp in Iraq, even though that story was corroborated with the satellite photography showing here's a fuselage of an airliner on which they trained, and it's not exactly flying in and out, flying tourists to Baghdad. They had Saddam International for that. So it will be interesting to see whether or not that story unfolds in a positive light. And I am glad that Fox News Channel and O'Reilly has picked up the story. I don't know where else it's been picked up, but Newsmax broke it here in the U.S. off of the London Times article. So that's an encouraging story, if it's true. If it's not, and we know for sure that quite a lot of intelligence is fabricated. So you got to be careful. All right. So what else is going on? Well, Saddam, didn't he look pathetic? Boy, did he look pathetic. Talk about a bad hair day. Why is it that these terrorists all look that way when we catch them? And hopefully that'll be the only image the Arab world sees of him until his trial. We shouldn't allow not a single photo to be published anymore until no video until the trial. Because, you know, Islamic Jihad, they were just the leader of Islamic Jihad today was interviewed and enraged. that Saddam did not go out in a suicide gun battle. Now, could you imagine that? Here's some Islamic terrorist organization, and their leader was really angry that Saddam didn't go out shooting. These other suicide terrorist groups, Saddam has given them tens of millions of dollars to entice young people mostly to go blow themselves up. And they give the money to the young people's family. And the leader of Islamic Jihad is enraged that Saddam didn't go out in a suicide gun battle. And I think in Hamas, all these Islamic terrorists, they're all so angry. And I think, how naive are you people? Are you kidding me? You think Saddam Hussein is going to sacrifice himself for jihad? He'd sacrifice himself for alcohol and STDs, but not for jihad. All right. Let's see. And this article by Reuters, Saddam Hussein, a broken man, has supplied intelligence that helped capture two top wanted officials, according to U.S. sources. This is encouraging also. The U.S.-backed Iraqi Governing Council said Saddam would go on trial facing a possible death penalty for three decades of ruthless rule. And already, now we'll interrogate him, and it's my guess that we're going to get a lot of information out of him. A lot. That's my guess. We'll see, right? But, you know, I don't think anyone has ever accused Saddam of being a rocket scientist. He was good at hiding. He was good at killing people when he had guns and they didn't. But I don't think he's a rocket scientist. And I think our guys are at least three times smarter than he is. Certainly better looking. And I think we're going to get a lot of information out of him. And that will be great. But apparently already, according to Captain Jason Beck, he's a U.S. military spokesman, he said that intelligence from Saddam himself, combined with documents in his briefcase, led to the capture of two important men. Now, I think we've arrested more than two since Saddam. I think we've gotten six people that we've learned about directly from Saddam and documents he had with him. But for Captain Jason Beck to say that we got intelligence from Saddam personally and combine that with information in his briefcase and led to the capture of two key men in Baghdad, that's good news. That's good. I'm not saying Saddam is going to break, but I'm saying, well, that we're going to get a lot of information out of him. And the Iraqi Governing Council, they're saying if the U.S. does turn over sovereignty to Iraq on June 30th, right, and that's our timetable right now, that we would turn over sovereignty in Iraq on June 30th, that if we do that, that Saddam could be executed on July 1st. And I don't understand what would take him so long. You know, June 30th, and they're going to wait till July 1st? Why wait a day? But at any rate, what's the Christian thing to do? The Christian thing to do is to kill him. We'll be back after this. Bob Benyard here. Welcome to those of you listening via KGov on the web. Right now, the next half a minute, it's just you and I. The Denver audience doesn't join us for another 30 seconds. But, hey, you check out our store at KGov. at kgov.com, up in the top right of the homepage, shop online, get your Bob and Your Live materials. Or you can call us for suggestions to ask questions about our teaching materials. Call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, the Denver audience will join us. Welcome to the Denver audience. This is Bob and Yart Live. This is Bob and Yart in a live commercial break, in fact. And our call-in line is the same as our order line. You could reach us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And here's some of the materials we've got that you might enjoy, might help you learn and grow. We've got a debate, Does God Exist?, a written 170-page debate between Bob and Yart versus Zaketh, Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? What an exciting read that is. And then another manuscript called The Plot, 330 pages, an overview of the whole Bible. If you grasp the overview of the Bible, then you'll have the key to its details. So check out The Plot. And you can get these online at kgov.com or by calling us at 1-800-8-NYART. We have a two-volume set, two CDs, MP3 CDs, teaching through the Book of Revelation. The first CD is called Seven Churches, Seven Seals, and the second one is called Seven Trumpets, Seven Bowls. And, you know, that first CD, it has a spirituality test on it, and you could rate yourself and your church based on Jesus' seven letters he wrote. You'll love it. One 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So we were flipping the channels today, catching up on the news about Saddam's capture. And I think it was on CNN. Was it CNN or one of the other networks? It was so stupid, it had to be on CNN. It must have been CNN. Although the other networks are capable of great stupidity. But this was so stupid, it had to be on CNN. They asked the question, how are they going to be able to find an unbiased jury in Baghdad? Where in the world? They said, where in the world could we go to get an unbiased jury or an unbiased judge? And it was so incredibly stupid. But that's what's happened to us. We can no longer think because of all the cliches we hear incessantly. Like, you're innocent until proven guilty, right? How many times do you hear, let's say, Aurelio O'Reilly say that? You're innocent until proven guilty. The media says that so many times that almost all Americans believe it uncritically. You're innocent until proven guilty? Oh, really? So if you're not proven guilty, then you're innocent. Well, you're guilty the second you attempt to commit the crime. You're guilty. That second, you're guilty. The second you attempt to commit a crime, you're guilty. You commit a crime, you're guilty. Now, if the criminal justice system is incapable or incompetent and they can't convict you, you're still guilty. You're still guilty and you will still be punished by God. You're still guilty. Now, you can't be punished until you're proven guilty. You're not convictable until you're proven guilty. You're not punishable until you're proven guilty by men. But you're guilty the second you committed the crime. And if that were the rule, if you have to have a judge and a jury who's not biased, then all a murderer or a rapist would have to do is videotape the crime and just air it and show everyone, I did it, I murdered him, watch, here's the video of me blowing this guy's head off. And just show that to everybody. And then no judge will be qualified to judge because they'll know you're guilty, and no jury can judge you because they know you're guilty. So if somebody commits a crime during the Super Bowl and the whole nation sees it, then they have to go free because none of us are neutral. So you have to find someone who's utterly ignorant And the most ignorant person is the most qualified juror in the America system. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278 in Gilbert, Arizona. Mike, speak your mind.
That's right, Gilbert, Arizona. I didn't even know I can get a station from Colorado. I was quite surprised.
Well, Mike, I KLTT is one of the 10 most powerful radio stations in the country.
Oh, so you, what is it, 50,000 or something?
It's 55,000 watts, very low on the dial.
You're bouncing really well over here. I'm picking you up in the Phoenix area. But, Gilbert, Arizona is the name of the suburb.
Yeah, I used to live in Tempe, Mike.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company.
Right.
Out in Mesa.
That's great. And why did you move out?
The weather didn't agree with me.
Oh, okay.
It was a little hot, Mike. You know, Sky Harbor Airport?
Yes.
The planes can't even land there sometimes. It's too hot.
But remember, it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
Listen. Yeah. I was surprised that you were. I was just looking through the dial, and I find that you're talking about the good old capture of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And I have a mixed feeling.
All right.
First of all, I'm happy about one thing, and that is that that he was caught, and I'm glad that the way it was done by the administration is perfect, with the pictures and all that. The way you were saying, you know, the video and all that.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
Uh huh. And I think that's excellent. The president deserves the highest regards for that. But here's the I'm sad about one thing. Okay.
Yeah.
What about December 26th? We wake up and all the kids of the world don't have any presents because Santa Claus didn't make its rounds.
Mike, what are you talking about?
Well, think about it. Didn't he look like Santa Claus?
Wait a minute, Santa Claus. Wait, who are? We thought, who did he look like? He looked like Cheech and Chong, one of those guys.
Well, you got to remember,
he looked like
one
Charlie
thing.
Manson.
Charlie Manson.
That's who he looked like, Charlie Manson.
But there's another connection. Look, the Babylon area, good old Iraq, is the foundation of civilization, supposedly.
Right, 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 right.
And look, there's another connection. Santa Claus is supposed to be like an old guy, right? Been around for a long time.
Right, right, right. All right.
Hey, look, hey, it one and one together.
All right, that was what the Iraqi information minister said. Remember, he said when Bush's ancestors were in caves in Baghdad, civilization had begun. And, you know, there's something to that. The human race did disseminate from the Middle East there, the Mesopotamian Valley, the Tigris and the Euphrates, because that's where Noah's Ark landed in Turkey.
That's correct.
And Mount Ararat. And
right.
And those who left the Ark in the next generations, they traveled in that fertile crescent between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Eventually, they settled Ur of the Chaldees.
That's right.
And Abraham was born there, and he then went to Canaan.
Any possibility that, you know, how scientists say that the cradle of civilization actually, or human race, is actually Africa? Any possibility that at that time Africa was joined with that area? And
well, they were confused. That's the cradle of sickle cell anemia.
Okay.
Not of civilization.
Anyhow.
Human society began in exactly where the Bible tells us it began.
Right.
And all of scholarship affirm that until really there was a strong atheistic bent and there was a desire and a bias in scholars to try to disprove that. But it's so clear that ancient history, recorded history, begins in the Middle East.
Isn't it true also that a lot of the fruits have been found to have actually started in that area? A lot of the fruits have been known to come from that area.
Well, you're talking about homosexuality?
No. I'm talking about actual good old edible fruits.
Oh, fruits. Okay.
Yeah, they have been traced. Now, in those days, supposed to be desert. It was supposed to be...
Oh, it was the Fertile Crescent.
Right.
Yeah. I would thought you meant Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about...
Yeah, I understand now.
That's a good twist. That's a good twist to it. You got to even... Okay. Touché.
Sorry, Mike. But, civilization started there, and we know that civilization does not go back 100,000 years because where are, you know, the most, the greatest graves, when people were ready to die and they built extraordinary tombs, they, those tombs go back thousands of years to the pyramids and in China. And so if human beings have been around for 100,000 years to reach the peak of civilization that we hit 5,000 years ago, where are the graves of 1,000 generations of human beings, of empires, of cities? Where are they all?
That's true.
You know, that city that Abraham was born in that we've now excavated, Ur of the Chaldees.
Ur of the Chaldees, right.
The ziggurat that they excavated there, you know, that was buried because the rivers moved, because everything was settling after the flood.
Right, of course.
And the river moved 10 miles away and all, but and it's covered up with sand and sludge. But anyway, they excavated this ziggurat, this temple, and inside the roof of this huge room was not flat. It was concave.
Okay.
And it was slightly bowed upward. And the reason for that is that architects have realized that if you're in a large room and the ceiling is flat, you'll feel like it's going to fall in on you.
Really?
Yeah, it's like an optical illusion, or it's just a psychological factor. And so in large rooms, the ceilings tend to be slightly, I forget, is it concave or convex? I don't know. Slightly bowed upward in the center, like a bowl above you, even slightly. So you can't tell. You almost think it's flat, but it's not, and you're more comfortable. That's the way the architects who built 4,000 years ago in the city of Ur, maybe the oldest city in the world, when they built that large temple, which was huge, they built the ceiling like that.
Exactly.
And how could that be the first city in the first – they figured that out that quickly?
That was
the result of the knowledge that survived over the ark with Noah and his three sons who came over the ark who were brilliant. And they gave to the world advanced culture and technology and knowledge.
Can you imagine the kind of information they brought on board? I mean, they must have brought a lot of, what are they called, scrolls?
That could be.
From the prior times, right?
Yeah. If so, it's a tragedy they've been lost.
Right.
Could you imagine? But, you know, the Bible says that when men were created, they lived a long time, about 1,000 years.
Right.
And then after the flood, they began to decrease their life expectancy rapidly.
Right.
So that it went to 500 years and 300 years, 200, 150, and down to about 180 years.
Right.
And we only have, to my knowledge, we only have one other genealogy of generations from before the flood to after the flood.
Who's that?
And that's, you've heard of the Epic of Gilgamesh in the flood account from the ancient Babylonians?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Well, there's a chronology that sort of parallels the Bible ages. But we got to go. We'll be back. Thank you, Mike from Arizona. We'll be back after this. All right, this is a live commercial break. Everything we do here at Bob and Your Live is live, except for Tony Funderburk. He's dead. I mean, he's recorded. Tony Funderburk's spot where he tells you everything we have in 60 seconds. Now, that's a spot to memorize. If ever there was a commercial to memorize, that's it. But the rest of the stuff, it's all live. You can't memorize it. So you just got to be there. So I was telling you about some of our materials that you can get, enjoy, and really learn from. For example, we have two of our best-selling videos, Mount Moriah, The Evidence for the Resurrection, and God and the Death Penalty, New Testament Support for Capital Punishment. New Testament support. New Testament. Why is it focused on the New Testament? Because Christians tend to dislike the Old Testament. If you say, well, you should support the death penalty, and they say, oh, no, the Bible doesn't. You say, yeah, the Bible says that a murderer shall be put to death. They say, oh, that's the Old Testament. Like as though the Old Testament were evil or something. It's like, you can't quote. And we ask them, did Jesus quote the Old Testament or the New Testament? Which one? quoted the Old Testament. Never one time did he quote the New Testament. It wasn't written yet. And he quoted the Old Testament 100 times, including that you should kill people who break God's law. He said that too. And he said, I know you people don't kill people who should be put to death because of your traditions. You guys think you're smarter than God. But Jesus said, guess what? You're not. You're not even very smart compared to a slug. You think you're smarter than God. Well, Jesus didn't say it exactly that way. But anyway, so this video is God and the death penalty, New Testament support for capital punishment. New Testament. New Testament. And that's to get around the bias of Christians who don't like God in the Old Testament. They think God is mean in the Old Testament, nicer in the New Testament. So we sort of try to help them through that with this really fun video. How could a death penalty video be fun? How is that possible? I said a really fun video. How could that be? Well, I met my wife at a death penalty event. So you never know. If you're a liberal out, if you're a bit of a liberal Christian and you don't want to be, it's just like you caught it like a disease or something. And you think if you're single and if you think if you become more wise, you might do a better job attracting a mate, getting married, well, then you could check out that video and it might help you get married. Well, not necessarily. But it'll help you in the area of wisdom and knowledge and understanding, if we're quoting the Bible accurately. So you could check that out, get the video, check it out. And if we're not, 30-day money-back guarantee. All right. Oh, yeah, I was telling Mike from Arizona, and Mike, thanks for tuning in way out there. How many miles away is that from our studio here in our underground bunker in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains? That's far away. Hundreds of miles. How many hundreds? It's far. Is it 400 miles? I got to find out. Hey, how long? You know what I should do? I should ask Al, my co-host computer, I should ask Al how far away is, did he say Phoenix, Arizona? It's 788 miles from Arvada, Colorado. That's the closest city to our underground bunker. 788. Now, Al is, I tell you, my co-host computer, he's good. There's not a question you can come up with that he can't answer. All right. So 800 miles away, and it came in. That's pretty good. All right. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So Iraqi Governing Council member Muwaffaq al-Rabai, Adrul Muhammad Rabai, he met with Saddam on Sunday, along with our governor there, the Iraqi governor, Paul Bremer. And he said, I found a very broken man. He was psychologically ruined and very demoralized, Mohammed Adrul Muhammad Rabai said. And then he added this. He said, Saddam felt safer with the Americans. You know, I was thinking that. I was saying to myself, I said, Saddam is probably relieved that he's been arrested. I bet he was relieved. Yeah, see, even the engineer, the show engineer thinks so. I bet he was relieved. Yeah. And so anyway, good news here. Now let's go to the phones, 800-836-9278 in Denver, Colorado. Elizabeth, speak your mind.
Oh, hi, Bob. I just wanted to mention you brought back a memory I had of 9/11.
Yeah.
And how we have to be aware and trust in the Lord.
Yeah.
Because I was supposed to fly to my daughter's, a friend of hers' wedding out in California on 9/11 at 9 o'clock.
Oh, my.
And I kept saying, well, you know, my mother had passed away, and I had much time to vacation and stuff. Well, anyway, so I said, no, I said, I'm going to pray on it more. My daughter kept saying, but make your mind up, mother.
Yeah.
Anyway, I finally made up my mind. I flew out Sunday morning at 9 o'clock on United Airlines.
Right.
Out of Denver. I get on this, you know, I rush in to get on, you know, with any, you know, long waits like
yeah.
we have now. Got on the plane, and with a wide body, and apparently it must have come from the East Coast now that I think about it, because the plane was full, and there was just a few people boarding, you know,
right,
it wasn't
right,
large.
Right.
So, I, you know, sat in the plane, you know, I went, I got up, came up the wrong aisle, and I had to go to the other side because it was a wide body. Anyway, I went to sit down, I was sitting by myself, and I always carried my Bible with me, and I said, well, let me do my, you know, reading, and then, you know, relax, ask the Lord to keep, you know, me safe and whatnot, not that I'm afraid to fly.
Right.
Anyway, at the end of the flight, an hour and a half to L.A., you know, I got up, and I said, I'll wait for everyone to get off. I got up for just a minute to stretch, and I look, and there was one man all the way up in the front, you know, those jump seats that
yeah.
they have?
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's shouting to somebody all the way in the back, and he was a dark man. And, you know, he said, I'll meet you out, something, and I'll meet you outside.
All right, and this
you know?
Is the Sunday before 9/11?
Right.
All right.
And I said, well, that's strange. If you're friends, you usually can ask someone to move. You know, of course, he was sitting in the back. No one wants to sit in the back.
Yeah.
I said, now, why would one guy be sitting in front and one in the back? And I said, oh, Mary, you know, it doesn't mean, you know. So I just gathered my stuff and left, and LAX is so busy and whatnot. And anyway... And then when 9/11 happened, I couldn't sleep that night before. Right. My daughter lives near the beach, and it was like I heard planes. And I just my body just could not rest. And then that morning, I fell asleep finally at 2, and my daughter woke me up at 6:30 saying that New York is what was happening in New
yeah,
York.
Right.
And you know, it's almost like. And then I had heard a voice in my. Because I went into a deep sleep because I was so tired. You know, I had jet lag finally catching up with me, and I heard like conversations. It's almost as if I could I do a switchboard at my company.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if I heard someone saying, you know, now let's see what they're going to do without their computers and all this other stuff. It's almost as if I cued into somebody's conversation.
Hmm.
But I always look back on it. I said, when they talked about the airline stewardesses that sit in the front, you know what I mean?
Right.
And how they sit in the back, how they might have been strategizing the technique and the time frame that they have to do things. Do you know what I mean?
No.
This was a very intricate, this was really studied very thoroughly.
Right.
As how much time they had to while they were still buckled up in their seats, you know what I mean?
Right.
While they can make their move and then carry out, I mean, do it in a horrifying way. I can imagine. I'm just.
Well,
I never,
because of their credit card expenditures and all, we've tracked their movements, I believe
right.
most of the 19 in the couple weeks before the. A terrorist attack, and
yes.
I don't think they were on a flight from Denver to L.A.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that
oh.
it seems like, you know, seems so. To me, it seems strange. You know that they would be.
I agree. It seems strange, but, Elizabeth. Here's the way, you know, I've being on the air and for 12 years, but since
right.
9/11, for the last couple of years, you know, I've had Christians call up. I've talked to Christians off the air who've said. Things like they think maybe God told them not to get on
right.
a plane. Or
uh-huh. Right. I didn't think that.
Don't,
I just said God
right.
guides us if you're in faith.
Well, think about what that also is saying.
What is that?
That's saying that all those who were killed that day did not have as good a relationship with God as you do.
Well, I wouldn't want to make a judgment, but
right,
sometimes
but
we
listen,
get so busy in our world.
But
that we
ideas.
Don't think.
But ideas have consequences.
I see.
And so if you're right,
uh-huh.
see, I'd rather attribute it all just to jet lag or indecision.
Right.
Right? Or
rushing, right.
Right. Because otherwise, God is saying that he's more concerned with you being stuck on a tarmac for 3 hours than the Christians who were slaughtered by terrorists that day. Because you wouldn't have been killed if you flew that day. You
no,
would have just
no.
maybe had to sit in a plane for a few hours.
Well, what I'm thinking of is that we to be aware of what's around us and to know that, you know, people, that there is harm around us. There is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All of us. And then, you know, Saddam was not a Muslim. He only
no.
stuck up with them.
Right. Exactly.
You know, a couple of years just to be on their good side because he saw that they were a threat to even his regime.
He had a copy of the Quran written in his blood in the last decade, in the 90s.
Right, that's true. Yeah,
yeah.
I heard that on one of his... So I don't think that's why...
You're right. He was not a believer in Allah. He was a secular... ruthless, not only a murderer, but he was into partying and immorality, sexual immorality.
Right, taking advantage of and every, you know, just complete control.
Yeah, but you know, even the jihadists on 9/11, they by their credit cards and eyewitness accounts, we know that some of them went to strip bars the night before.
They lived a very they love this culture for that. They can get away with that in their culture. They're so
And actually, Elizabeth, I think that's what's bad about our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the heartbreak.
Right. We shouldn't allow sexual immorality. It should be against the law.
No, I watched a program on WB2 in the evening. I thought I'd catch a comedy, you know.
Oh.
And it was a dating, and it was like so sexually motivated by choosing, you know, how they choose mates or who the best person is.
Yeah.
And then they also advertise for some sort of a place that sells, you know, illicit movies.
Well, and
on television.
Well,
how could they advertise young kids?
Right, now that's WB2 in a dating show, which I guess we could expect it from them. They're so filthy. But you know that comedian who died recently, John Ritter?
Yes.
He hosted an animal show back 10 years ago or so.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the name of the animal show. I only saw 2 minutes of that animal show in its whole existence. And it was just by accident. I just saw 2 minutes. And in 2 minutes, he made 3 sexual jokes. It was a kids' animal show, and there were kids in the audience.
Right.
And they'd show video of animals. And he made just a regular sexual joke, a sexual joke with animals, a man and an animal having sex, and a homosexual joke. In 2 minutes, 3 sexual jokes, John Ritter. And when he died, my first thought was, great. I'm so glad he's in hell right now, rather than living and breathing to destroy more innocent lives.
Well, you know, it's funny because I always come across that in the Bible when I'm scanning, is that when said it's better that, you know, someone who desecrates a child, one of my little ones, should be better that they have, you know, a rock tied to their neck or something.
Yes, right.
And if only people would hear what the Bible, and I heard that as a young woman, because I had an uncle that was a little perverted, you know, and I had to be so careful because I was a young girl, and I felt terrible about how he was influencing my brothers, you know.
Well, Elizabeth, I know what you're talking about, but you know what? You'd be better if a millstone were hung around your neck and thrown into the sea than if you hurt a little one.
Right.
That must be an Old Testament verse because it's so mean. Is that an Old Testament verse?
No, that's Christ said that.
Oh,
Jesus said that.
Jesus, the Lord of love, said it'd be better to put a rock around your neck and fling it into the sea than to hurt a little one who believes in me to sin. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
I appreciate your call. God bless you. Yeah, you know what? It's in red. It's got to be New Testament. It's got to be Jesus because it's in red letters right here, Matthew 18, verse 6. In fact, you know what I have? I'm the proud owner of a red-letter Old Testament. Most people only have red-letter New Testament Bibles, and they tend to discard the Old Testament. They think, well, that's a bad part of the Bible. I have a red-letter Old Testament edition. Because, you know, God spoke also in the Old Testament, and you'd be shocked how much of the Old Testament is in red. You flip through it, and it'll blow your mind. It's so cool. So before the next time you're going to diss the Old Testament, think for a moment and think, wow, Jesus quoted the Old Testament frequently. So you should too. This is Bob Inyet reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.